recording. Oops. What I'm going to have you do is introduce yourself so that I can check to see that the recording is up to the standards.
Gotcha.
Okay. So if you just tell your name and who you work for.
Okay. My name is Natalie Amaral, and I work for AIS Observers.
Okay. Great. And there, just on time, the blower.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Okay. So this is, I'm going to give you a formal introduction, which I just realized I forgot for the last one. This is an interview for the New Bedford Fishing Heritage Center, funded by an Archie Green Fellowship from the Library of Congress. As part of this project, we're interviewing shoreside workers in the New Bedford Fairhaven fishing industry to record their stories, document their skills and knowledge, and better understand their role in the fishing industry. The recording transcript will be part of the permanent collection of the Library of Congress. I'm Madeline Hall-Arbor. Today I'm speaking with Natalie, and I don't know your last name.
Amaral.
Amaral. You just said it.
That's okay.
In New Bedford at the Fishing Heritage Center. And it is now around 3:10. Okay. So, you already introduced yourself, and can you tell me a little bit about your job?
So, it's my job to meet commercial fishing vessels when they land, and go through whatever catch they have and collect lengths and other biological samples such as otoliths, which are the inner ear bones, or scales depending on what species it is. So I'm given a very specific list by NOAA Fisheries about what species they want data collected on.
Okay, so you're employed by AIS, but you are actually, the data's going to NOAA. AIS,
yes.
I guess, is hired by NOAA.
Yes, I'm a contractor,
right.
A government contractor.
Yeah, I see. Okay. And where and when were you born?
I was born in Fitchburg, Massachusetts in 1994.
And what made you interested in fishing business or fishing fish?
I mean, I guess this is never where I really expected to end up. I've always been interested in marine biology, and it took me going to college to really discover what path I wanted to follow with it, because there's so many things you can do with marine biology. It's such an open field. But then taking fisheries in college, I realized, you know, this is really important. I can really give back to the environment and the sustainability projects that, you know, the world really needs right now. And it, you know, helped me find a meaningful career in something I'm really passionate about.
And how did you get interested to begin with?
I mean, I guess very, very initially, I always vacationed on Martha's Vineyard, and so I love being on the water. I love, you know, being on the ferry and going over. So the ocean and New England has always been such a big part of my life, and always, you know, I'm always happiest on the water. So I knew that that's what I wanted my life to be about.
And so, do you have any family that ever was involved in the fishing industry or anything to do with the sea, even?
Not that I know of. I mean, I have family in the Navy that I very much look up to. It's just that's not part of the water world I could go into. But I mean, that's always been great. But beyond that, not especially. No one in my family is specific fisheries, but, you know, casually and for relaxation, my family does like fishing and deep sea fishing on charters and things like that. So, for fun,
yeah.
It's always been the fishing industry in my life.
Well, that counts.
Yeah.
And is this your first job in your professional field?
Yes, I graduated almost a year ago now and got hired out of college to start being the port sampler for New Bedford.
How did you get the job?
Well, it's always crazy interviewing for jobs in the biological field, especially right out of school. It's very competitive, but I found this opening in AIS. I at first looked at the observer positions for at-sea observers, and I didn't think that was for me, so I found something almost equivalent on land and was lucky to apply in December when not that many people graduate,
mm-hmm.
So that kind of gave me the upper hand. Yeah, and they gave me a chance to start doing this job, so I took it and gave it everything I had.
Good. I'm curious about why you say you didn't think you'd be interested in being the at-sea observer.
I would be so terrified of being seasick all the time that I wouldn't be able to do my job well enough. And that's just, I don't know, it's scary. It's so dangerous out there. I give so much props to the guys that do it and just fishermen in general for being out there, but I'd be scared. My mom would be scared for me. So I decided to stay on land just for everyone's sake.
Sounds rational.
Yeah.
Okay. You can sort of talk me through a little bit about your job and what you do on a day-to-day basis and that kind of thing.
Sure. So every day is so different. I feel like I'm almost on call sometimes. So on a general day, I'll wake up in the morning, look at my email to see what boats have come in, try and look on our tracker to see what's coming in, and then I call every fish house that I see on a daily basis, so the auction, Burgies, Sea Watch for clams and quahogs, and ask if they have anything coming in, and if they do, hopefully it's something I need, and I'll go down, measure however many I have to measure. If it's coming in later in the day, then I have to plan it out and say, okay, Sea Watch is, you know, landing at 10, so I'll go there then, and then try and stagger everything out so I get it at the right time. So that's a typical day. I'll go back to my office after that and enter in all my data to keep it very organized, because it's hundreds every month of pieces of paper, multiple pieces of paper that go with each sample, and the actual bones and things like that that you have to keep track of. So that's a typical day, trying to find samples, where they are, if you need them, and then getting them and hoping people are willing to give you the time to get them, because it can be a process, and fish houses are crazy busy, and you never want to get in the way.
Yeah. So how did you learn how to do what you're actually doing?
I just was really lucky to have a lot of coworkers that were really patient to work with me. There's 7 of us in the port sampling program, so I have New Bedford and the Cape, technically, and then my next 2 closest people are Dave, he works out of Gloucester, and Mark works in Rhode Island, and both of them either came here to teach me, or I would go and see them and see what was going on in their ports. But it can be a crazy job to learn. When I was first being trained in the office, I was like, there is no way I'm ever going to be able to do this or be good at this, because it's so many components to keep track of. But you know, once you get in there, once you learn how to take otoliths out of every fish species that comes into the port, it becomes second nature, and you get your species that you see all the time that you just get good at. So it's a lot of practice, it's a lot of being very patient and just overly nice to people that don't necessarily like seeing the government come into their buildings, which is always very hard. But yeah, just, you know, I had people that were patient with me, and that was the best blessing ever, because I can't imagine teaching me how to do this and now having taught other people.
Yeah. So do you have a chance to talk to some of the workers in the plants or the fishermen themselves? Are you just strictly going in and doing your...
It depends. Whenever I get there, I mean, I always talk to whoever is managing that plant or whoever is at the processing. Sometimes I'll go and sample after the boat's already gone, so I won't get to see those fishermen. But a lot of the times on the Cape, like in Chatham or Hyannis, I go right to the boat and just talk to the people on the boat. And as they're offloading it into a truck or something, like, I'll step in and measure everything I can. So it depends on the place, but you know, you're always talking to somebody. People always want to know why you're there. I get to talk to everybody on the spectrum.
Mm-hmm. And do you ever get any pushback from people?
Yeah, all the time. You know, it's hard being a 22-year-old girl showing up in a government vehicle, seeing these men that have been doing this for 50 years, and then you step in and want to, you know, interfere. And it's hard, but I think as long as they know I'm not coming from a point of law enforcement or anything like that, as long as they know I'm not trying to get them in trouble or whatever they might think I'm doing, I can be really well received. And it's funny, now that I've been doing this for a year, you know, everyone knows me now and they are a lot more welcoming, and they know I'm as efficient as I can be getting everything done. I don't get in the way. So it's been a long journey to get where I am, so people respecting me and taking me seriously and, you know, realizing that, you know, I have a government mandate to be there and they have to let me be there.
Mm. What about the information that is being obtained from the Autolith and the scales? I know it's aging is at least part of it, right? Mm-hmm. Do you get involved at all in the analysis, or are you strictly sending things off?
That's one part that's really hard about my job, is that there's such a disconnect between my data and what actually happens to it. There's actually three steps in the process. There's all of us that are just data fiends collecting everything we can, and then we send it to another lab that ages all of it, and then we just don't know what happens. I mail off all my samples, and that's it. I don't think about it again because I have hundreds more coming in that I, you know, have to use my time for. And then once it goes to the aging people in that lab, it goes to the statistical people that actually do the numbers to work on the stock assessments and see how all the populations are doing. So I never talk to those scientists. I never talk to the aging scientists. And we had a great meeting this past June where we all got to get together, and I think that's when all the port samplers really realized how influential our data is and how hard it is for us that we don't get to see how it's being used. And I'm sure there are journals that this data is published in that, you know, I'd love to read, or just articles, and I have no idea where they would be.
Hmm. Yeah. How about, I mean, you were trained in marine biology, so you have a sense of maybe the stage of life of the fish that you're sampling, but you don't have any direct feedback from the otolith.
Right.
That would be frustrating, I would think.
It is. It's just more like this data is so important to me because it's such a big part of my life and I really care about it, and I want to know what happens to it, even if I can't be involved, just to be able to read about it would be great. And people, you know, come up to me and say, how old is this fish? And I'm like, I have no idea. So that's not my part of the job to have any idea. So it would be nice just to be able to answer more questions,
right,
even beyond that, because
yeah,
I have no idea sometimes.
Yeah. And that's a really interesting thought, too, because I wonder, if you were able to answer more questions, whether people would be more receptive to your being there, apart from the mandate.
Right. I mean, most things that fishermen ask me, I am able to at least have a conversation about. It's not as much questions as complaints. So I'm almost happy to be in a position where I have minimal power, you know, I don't have any connections to anyone high up to have these questions answered. So a part of it, it's good that I'm in the dark because, you know, I don't have access to that information, so I'm not responsible for it, and they can't blame me for anything.
Good point. And let's see. What is your academic background?
So I have my bachelor's degree in marine biology.
In marine biology, yeah. You said that, yeah. And what do you consider the hardest part of your job?
I think the hardest part can be every day is so different, and I'm personally someone that likes a schedule. I like regularity. But, you know, a boat could say, hey, I'm going to be here at 3, and then they're not there until 7. So it's hard to schedule things, and then once, you know, you get to the boats hoping that they have something. So it can be a lot of disappointment with not finding the samples you need, or boats saying they have something and they don't, or they do and they don't tell you. So, yeah, just how hectic it can be. You know, I do this job 7 days a week. It gets very, very tiring, but this is the busiest port in the country, so you have to expect it. But it's been a good learning curve for me, too, to learn how to deal with the craziness and, you know, not being on a schedule all the time.
Right. So when they give you assignments, it's assignments on certain species that you need to find the otoliths or the scales from?
Yes. So we work in quarters. So every quarter, a new huge sheet of requests come out. And, you know, I have to start looking at it, figuring out what I need from it. For me, I have around 30,000 lengths that I have to do in a quarter, which is a lot. The next highest person is around 10,000.
Wow.
So yeah, it's a lot. And
is that because you're at this point?
Yes. Okay. And that can also be something really disheartening too, because I feel like I'm never getting a lot done because there's always so much more to do.
A lot of my questions are more historical. So when you talk to people, how long have people been doing this sampling?
This,
before you?
We at AIS have had the contract for, I believe this is our third year, but it existed with another company before. I'm not sure for how many years. I know our guy Mark in Point Judith has been port sampling for I think maybe 10 years, so at least that long.
Mm-hmm.
But it could have been on a different program, so I'm not sure about New Bedford specifically, how long they've been port sampling here.
So AIS, I think, if I'm not mistaken, they were interested in the video monitoring too. That's not really, it's kind of thinking about the future. Have you heard anything about that? And do you anticipate your job changing at all?
I haven't necessarily heard about that. I mean, I'm very isolated in my port sampling job. Just the biggest thing I know about AIS is how involved they are with all the different observer programs, both here and in the Northwest.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't heard about video monitoring. I think that'd be great. Any new technology we can use is always helpful, can always give us a different perspective.
It wouldn't give you the same information that you get from the obelisk, though, that's for sure.
Right, yeah. Does not have the microscopic capabilities.
I was asking because I took a trip years ago to British Columbia when EDF was trying to get the switch over to what they ultimately did, which was cat shares. I mean, they were arguing for ITQs, but anyway, British Columbia had that system, and they have a video monitoring system, and Archipelago is the company that does the video monitoring, but I know that there were some connections somehow with AIS. I just don't remember the details. So
they have a bunch of contracts that are just little things here and there that I'd probably never know about.
Yeah. So what do you see as your future?
Honestly, my dream job would be, working for Woods Hole, being one of the scientists that is involved with the statistical analysis of, the catch, but also being somebody that has worked in the port, there is such an obvious lack of information within the higher up scientific community, I think, and what it's like being on the docks. So I guess I've learned a lot about the social component of fisheries more than I would have expected. So I think that's something I'd really like to contribute to is the information collaboration between, the guys that are out on the boats and the people responsible, for doing the scientific part of regulations. Because, we do have a lot to learn from each other. And as a scientist, it can be really hard to interact with the fishermen, but really they just know so much more than I do, and oftentimes they ask me questions or they're like, you would know better. I'm like, probably not, you've been a lobster fisherman for like 35 years, you know them way better than I do. So I think that's something I'd like to see myself doing, is we're going to get these two groups together.
They could use that.
It's hard, and I understand the disconnect, and there's already a lot of great things that go on between, meetings and things like that to try and get everyone together.
There are some cooperative projects, too, that
right.
have been very beneficial, I think. So you mentioned a couple of different species. Can you give me just a breakdown of some of the species that you typically get samples for?
I mean, every day I probably see, even if I don't collect samples from it, but just, haddock, cod, pollock, more so in the winter, winter flounder, summer flounder when it's open, halibut if I'm lucky, redfish, cusk a few at a time, mackerel, silver hake, red hake, surf clams, quahogs, lobsters, red crab, hagfish, skate wings, whole skates. I think that's almost the whole list of things I do. Scup. Yeah. It's a lot.
Yeah, it is. Do you anticipate any change with climate change? And are you seeing anything yet? Or have they talked about anything yet?
I think being the age I am and the length of my experience isn't long enough for me to know or have enough information, just because I went to a college that's really great on sustainability, and one thing they really drove home with us is looking at climate change on a 30-year scale. You know, you can't look at it like, oh, it snowed here this year. It's
right.
No climate change. So I hope, you know, to be able to see maybe in 10 years in my 30s if there's any difference. But I think in regards to environmental change, I think just the biggest thing we have to look at is just overfishing in general of all species is the biggest concern. Not environmentally related, but possibly, I don't know.
Have you felt any discomfort from being a female on the waterfront?
It's very hard, I'll be honest. And I knew what I was getting myself into. It's historically a male-dominated society. But I've been really surprised in a few ways. A lot of the older generation look at me as a daughter, and they treat me how they would treat their daughter on the waterfront. But that's not to say that's every time. I mean, people have made comments to me that I wouldn't want to repeat to anyone, that, you know, make it hard for me to get through my workday. But I just hope that my presence can, like, pave the way for future generations being more comfortable there, because, you know, at that point, we have been there, and we are, you know, not backing down. And I think that's my biggest thing. It's not letting anyone scare me or intimidate me or, you know, treat me like I'm a weak woman on the waterfront, because that's not how I feel. So, yeah, I think establishing myself in that type of presence has been the easiest way to get through it.
Mm-hmm. And have you talked to your, I guess I would call them mentors in a way, the people that live there longer or have done this job longer, the guys, have they talked at all about their reception from, you know, in general and
compared to me?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, for a while I was the only girl on our team, so it was me and the busiest port and what I would consider the most difficult port in, you know, Maine's Virginia. So I don't know, I think I got props for it, and it's something I'm really proud of. You know, I took on this huge challenge, but it's definitely different when I'm with the guys in their ports or they're with me, you know, when we're in my port. All of the men are, you know, very generous and very helpful and will move anything that I need moved, even if I don't really need it moved. So, and the guys are just like, this would never, ever happen to me. So it has its pluses and its minuses, but, you know, overall, I wish I was just a more neutral presence. But yeah, the guys, they look out for me too. I feel like the baby sister almost of the group. You know, they want to make sure I'm safe, and they're so helpful, you know, with it being really busy here. And, you know, it's harder for me to move 100-pound boxes of fish than it is for them, as, you know, however that may sound. But yeah, they realize that it is harder for me in different ways.
Let's see. Have you met any other women on the waterfront?
I'm trying to think really hard. Not that I can honestly really think of. I'll run into an observer every now and then, and there are a lot of awesome female observers that I know in this area that, you know, are in the same position I am, and sometimes worse because they're at sea, but not from an industry standpoint, I was at one place one day and this guy looked at me and he's like, "You're the only girl I'll see all day besides my wife." And it's the weirdest thing. So I think they know me as the only girl on the waterfront, you know, if I'm somewhere new and they're like, "Oh, are you the girl that port samples?" And I'm like, "Yeah, that's me." And they're like, "Oh yeah, we know." So they know who I am on the waterfront, even if they don't know me, because I'm the only girl they see all day, I guess.
Which could be plus or minuses, I guess.
Right, yeah. You know, they respect me, but it's also sometimes like a "why are you here" kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, some girl has to do it first. Why not me?
So do you ever have to get into long conversations about why the sampling is taking place?
Not especially. Once I, you know, state my reasons that, you know, I'm here as a government contractor, all I do is collect data, usually that's the end of the questions, because I'm not law enforcement, I'm not going through anything they have, I'm not a threatening presence anymore, so I don't really care. I think mostly people just want to share information with me about what they're seeing. They're less interested in what I'm actually doing because it's visibly not all that interesting to outside people. So I'm more just here about trends that they're seeing. And, you know, if I'm sampling squid, they'll be like, "Oh, this is the best squid we've had in 3 years. And I'll be like, "That's really awesome information that, you know, you guys are sharing. Like, I wonder if that matches up with the data." So it's more a lot of stories that I get to hear from people, or things they're noticing or questions they have, not really related to what I'm doing.
Yeah. So do you keep track of any of that, or is it just part of the background conversation kind of thing?
I mean, from a personal standpoint, I just find it really interesting because, you know, what other scientists talk to these guys on a daily basis? You know, pretty much no one. I don't know if I'm allowed to share this with you. Luke might have to cut this out. But we write, all the samplers, we write biweekly blogs about things going on the waterfront. So usually I'll write stuff like that in there that they share, because that's, you know, what the scientists will never know but could be meaningful
mm-hmm.
information. So, you know, if I have a boat that is switching gears, or they're saying we're in this area and there's none of this species here but there was last year, then that's something I'll write in there, just, you know, anecdotes that could be useful.
That's very interesting, yeah. Because I know that there has been more interest in what we call traditional ecological knowledge,
mm-hmm.
and trying to get the scientists to consider it. But if they don't ever hear it, and if it's all just one anecdote, if you have several people noticing similar things, and it becomes closer to data.
Right, and I also think that in my position, people are so much more willing to tell me things because I'm like a normal person there. I don't show up as an interviewer asking questions like, "What have you noticed about cod over the last 30 years? Because that will shut any fisherman down. They do not want to talk to you about it. They don't want to tell you where they're fishing. But, you know, I overhear things and they trust me, and, you know, every time I see them, they'll tell me something different. So I think almost as like just background information, like it's really awesome to be in my position to get this information.
How long do you think you'll end up staying as a sampler?
I've actually recently accepted a new position.
Oh, really?
Yes. So I'll be starting my new job December 1st. But this honestly has been such a great year of experience, and I'm so happy I did this before doing anything else, because now I know what it's really like out there, and I have such a different perspective and respect and understanding for people in the fishing industry and fishermen and all the components. So I'm really lucky.
Do you mind me asking what you're going to be doing?
Yeah. So I'll be working for the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission.
Okay.
And my job will take place at the Jamestown, Rhode Island Department of Environmental Management. And I'll be a fisheries specialist for them. So still a large part of my job will be interacting with fishermen, helping them with new technologies for reporting and things like that. I'll get to do a bunch of different things down there, but it will be more of an office setting, which is exciting and sad, but I'll miss the field work.
Yeah. But Port Judith and Rhode Island in general have a pretty active fisheries and science interaction. There are a couple of organizations that you might eventually end up wanting to get to know a little bit better. There's the Commercial Fisheries Institute, I think. I forget the acronyms.
That's okay.
But and also your University of Rhode Island has used to have a very active fisheries program.
Mm-hmm.
It's much less so now. It's more international than local, but and their Sea Grant program used to have more fisheries related activity. But there's probably still enough that it could keep you engaged.
Right.
You know, so it'll be interesting. You were saying you work 7 days a week. How many hours do you think you put in?
Honestly, I work 7 days a week, but it's rare that I'll work 40 hours. So, you know, it can be a 10-hour day, and then a 2-hour day, and then another 2-hour day, and then a 10-hour day. So, and then, you know, the next day I might have a day off if, you know, weather's bad and nothing came in. So it's really so different, you know, per day, per season, per species, depending on what I'm trying to get and putting the effort into.
Okay. Is there anything you can think of that I haven't asked you? Because I don't know a lot about fish sampling.
Yeah.
So
it's not that big of a thing. Not that many people know what it is. I think if I could say anything about our program, it would just be that I think there should be more. There's so much opportunity, you know, for boats landing, you know, here especially, and other places. I think mostly New Bedford, I would just like another person, you know, to help. But even in other parts of the country, port sampling just gives such different information as opposed to observing, because you're on one boat all day. You can only do the fish on that boat,
mm-hmm.
but I can see 5 to 10 boats in a day and get that much information. So I think I would love to see more on-land sampling opportunities and programs, because I think, if I'm not mistaken, through the NOAA and Woods Hole, the 7 of us port samplers are responsible for 75% of the data used in stock assessments, which is a huge number, you know. So for me, that's like 10% at least. So yeah, I think if there were more of us, we'd get more information, and other parts of the country, in Alaska, places like that, I think it would be awesome. And I mean, there might be, I could just have no idea that there's other port samplers besides us, but I think that'd be awesome.
Have you had a chance to meet anybody from other parts of the country that are doing what you do?
As far as port sampling, do you mean? I mean, when we all got together, I met everyone from Virginia to Maine within our program, but outside our program, I don't know any other companies or contracts that do port sampling. So I know everyone on my team, which is kind of a big deal because we have people all the way in Virginia, so it's hard to get all of us together.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I just know our group.
So you've had a chance just to look briefly through this exhibit. We're hoping that our interviews, this set of interviews, will lead to a little change,
mm-hmm.
and or additions maybe to what would you like to see emphasized if we were going to focus on port sampling?
It's just so funny because it's such a small part of it. To me, it's such a small part of the industry. I'm like, I don't know how much it deserves. I mean, I guess, you know, just awareness, you know, a map of where all of us are and, you know, how much we're responsible for. And I think this might just be me because, you know, being selfish about it, but I think we are a really influential group of scientists that collected a lot of data, if you'd call us scientists, some people don't. But yeah, I mean, even if anything, just to have some of like the numbers that are associated with our group would be awesome because they're immense.
So it's so
hard because at sea stuff is so much more interesting to everyday people, and that's what I love. So,
well, that's this particular project. We're really focusing on the shoreside businesses and tasks, I guess, that go into that are really essential for the industry. So, your job may be a small part, but it's really essential, I think. So I agree.
I mean, I totally love this job and, you know, thank the world for it.
Now, how about your coworkers? Do you share war stories?
Yeah, it depends. I mean, I think I'm probably closest with our people up here, so I see Mark, Dave, and Jay, like, most regularly. But if something happens, you know, we'll immediately text each other. So, especially if we find a really uncommon sample from an area that we just never see, it's always really exciting for us. And it can be hard because, you know, I'm the only port sampler for about 50 miles each way, so it can feel really isolated, you know, being the only girl in the building, being the only port sampler in this part of the state. So I think to keep our sanity, we have to keep in touch with everyone around us that are doing the same thing, because there's so few of us.
Yeah. Do you have any idea who's going to replace you?
No, I just know there's a lot of people applying, which is really, really great. It's such a good experience for, you know, anyone getting out of college or wanting to get into fisheries. I mean, I hope I get time to work with them before I leave, just because it's such an intricate thing learning this port and how to maneuver it and who to talk to and things like that. So I hope I can help them in any way I can.
Yeah, I would think it would be valuable if you could actually go around with them and
introduce
them.
Some places are just really hard to find and they don't have an official address, but we have boats that offload there. So yeah, it'd be great. And I think I have, you know, a good reputation, so I'd love to introduce someone new to everybody so they know it's, you know, the person after me, it's still the same company and everything.
So, do you see any differences among I know that there are fleet boats and there are individually owned boats and there are small, you know, small and large businesses. Do you see any overall differences in how they react to the sampling? And
I mean, I think the places that I go most often are, you know, that have been visited most often, like Whaling City Auction. I either talk to someone there on the phone every day or I'm there every day. So they're one of the biggest companies here, but I know everyone there. Everyone there knows me. So I think it's hard to see differences just because I've been at all of them for so long now that they just all receive me the same way. But it's really great meeting, you know, the small businesses too, or the boats that, you know, offload directly onto trucks or something, because most of them are with their family and things like that. So, you know, they're a smaller business. They're some more like intimate conversation, being able to talk to them and like learn about them and like their business in particular when I'm at, you know, a bigger business and it's just, you know, millions of dollars of fish everywhere and, you know, people are too busy to really talk to me. But, you know, both have their values and, you know, both are great to experience and see.
So are you telling people yet that you're leaving?
Yes, I am. It's been hard and it takes a while to be good at this job and, you know, feel like you've mastered it. I don't even know if I feel that way yet. So yeah, it's, I'd like to think I would be somewhat hard to replace for some, at some point of time. But yeah, I've told my boss, and you know, AIS is honestly such a great company, and I'm so happy I work for them. My boss, Luke Kirchy, is great. He was an observer, so he knows how hectic life can be, and he has a seven of us and a lot of other programs, so he's just really trusting and, you know, gives you a lot of responsibility on yourself, which was something great to learn, you know, being right out of college where, you know, everything is assigned to you and there's a date on it, whereas here it's like, here's 3 months of work, figure it out. So yeah, I'll definitely miss AIS, but everyone knows and I think is genuinely excited for me because, you know, it is my next stepping stone to the career that I want to achieve.
I don't have any more questions that I can think of right now, but
I can't think of anything else I really really need to share about
right.
about the job.
Well, I feel like I know just a little bit more about sampling. I mean, I've run into, I know more observers than the short sampling.
Well, there are just so many more observers to know. I mean, if you meet anyone, it'd be me, probably. Yeah.
So I really appreciate your coming in, meeting me.
I appreciate being able to talk about it. I mean, I love this job. I want more people to know about it. I can never just tell someone straight up I'm a port sampler because I have no idea what it means.
Right.
So yeah, the more people that know about it, the better, and hopefully the more programs will be inspired.
I just thought one other thing, sort of corollary to some of the things we've been talking about. I know that NIMS is considering more monitoring, what they're calling monitoring portside. I think for a while Maine had a lot of portside monitoring, especially for herring.
Yeah.
But I think there are people making arguments that it would be financially better and perhaps get more information
mm-hmm.
for the assessments and so on if they had portside monitoring. So it sounds like you would agree with that to some extent.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on how they define monitoring. I know we have a herring contract where, you know, every 5 minutes they like grab a tote of herring and see how much, you know, non-direct species are in there. So I guess if I knew more about what they were defining monitoring as, I'd be able to say whether or not I think it would be something important. But, you know, even the port sampling program, you know, it needs a lot more, maybe not a lot, some more work done to be as efficient as it can be, like any other program. So in general, I would say that it's great that they're thinking of monitoring at all because it is more information. It's a different type of information. So yeah, if something came out of that, that would be awesome to look at.
Well, thank you, Natalie.
Anytime.
If I think of more questions, I'm going to give you a call.
Oh yeah, of course.